We are here for optimizing elimination, liver and gallbladder function. So in this section on optimizing elimination, we've already talked a lot about the large intestine, but the liver and the gallbladder are really intimately associated with elimination. So we're here to talk about those. And as you know, I'm Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, and I just love sharing this stuff. I just really geek out on explaining how the body works and how you can take charge and go in there and maneuver it around and fix it. So we'll just go jump right in and get started. Before we begin, I would like to make sure that you remember that this information is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified health professional. It's not medical advice. It's just a sharing from me to you, from my knowledge, my experience, my research, my clinical practice, and all the things that I've learned and done and experienced over the last over two decades. And it's not intended for you to just say and jump and do everything I say. What I want you to do is think about it, do some of the assessments, and then if you're under the care of a doctor, you're on medication, just make sure that you run these things by them and that it's going to be working out well for what's going on for you. Up until this point, we've looked at large intestine, we've looked at the small intestine, we've gone through the stomach, we've looked at the digestive tract, and if you look at the tube from mouth to anus, the order that things are, basically the mouth, the esophagus, the stomach, small intestine, large intestine, and exit. So where does the liver and the gallbladder fit in? Well, they are accessory organs that they're not actually part of the digestive tube. If you look at this picture, there's the stomach coming down from the esophagus into the stomach, and then it goes back into the beginning part of the small intestine, which is the duodenum, and then makes its way down to the lower part of the small intestine and then the large intestine. The liver and the gallbladder are to the side, and they have connections to the tract via secretions and via tubes. So this is the gallbladder over here, and it's got this tube. It's got a tube that comes into it from the liver, and we'll talk about that in a moment, and then it comes out and it goes right into the duodenum. And what it does is it squirts out a substance called bile. And we're going to see what bile does and how important bile is, not just to your fat digestion, but to your elimination process. Let's just start by talking about the three main functions of the liver. Number one, it does blood filtering. It cleans and clears metabolic wastes and toxins. So when we hear about detox or doing a liver detox or a cleanse, we're really talking about helping the liver to optimize the function that it has of blood filtering. So basically, the blood from the large intestine, there's a vessel that goes from the large intestine into the liver. And the reason is our large intestine, as we've discussed, is a huge function in regards to elimination, and in regards to getting rid of toxic waste. Well, as it's going through, the food is going through, the liquid is absorbed, and it can go back into the bloodstream, and it's going to absorb some of the toxins that were meant to go out. So in addition to the gut getting rid of this stuff, the gut recycles it back to the liver. So the liver gets first pass and all this, the blood supply coming out of the intestine. And it goes back to the liver, and the liver says, more toxins to detoxify. The toxins are coming in, the liver does its thing, and then it puts the toxins, packages them nicely into the bile, secretes the bile, and then the bile goes out into the system. So that's the first function. It's blood clearing. That was a broad overview of liver cleansing. And then the other piece, which is what we're really going to be talking about and focusing on today, is the fat digestion. Producing bile to emulsify fats for easy absorption. So we'll talk about what bile is. What does emulsify mean, and why does that make it easier for absorption? And finally, what the liver does is it regulates nutrients and the production of proteins and immune factors. So, fat digestion, what's involved? We all eat fat. Hopefully, we all eat fat every day, because there's essential fats that the body can't make, and fat is a critical nutrient. In spite of the fact that there's a lot of press about low-fat diets or no-fat diets, we indeed need fats. We just need the right kinds of fats, okay? So what we do is, the thing with fats is, you've probably seen this before, fat and water don't mix real well. If you just take and pour some olive oil into a glass of water, the fat kind of sits on top. It doesn't really disperse. The bloodstream is water. We need to create and get the fat into a format that's going to be utilizable by the body. So because they don't dissolve in water, they need to be emulsified before they get in there. What's emulsified? Well, it's breaking the fat globules down into teeny, teeny, tiny little globules, little emulsified droplets that then will mix well with the water. You also, in terms of getting the fats digested, you need an enzyme called lipase that gets secreted from the pancreas. And then you need the bile, which is made by the liver and stored in concentrated amounts in the gallbladder, to emulsify the fats. So you've got these big old fat globules, and the fat goes in there, and the bile comes out, and it kind of gets in between the fat molecules and breaks them apart into teeny, teeny, tiny pieces. That's called emulsification. Once they're in teeny, tiny pieces, makes it a lot easier for the lipase enzyme to actually work on it. It's hard for the lipase to really efficiently break down the fat in the time it has when it's just big globs. It doesn't have a lot of surface area. It can't get inside to break that down. So the emulsification breaks it all down into little teeny, tiny pieces. So we need both bile and we need lipase, okay? It doesn't handle those big ones efficiently if you just use the lipase. So a lot of people have their gallbladders removed, and we're going to talk about what that means and how you can actually have healthy life after gallbladder removal. So let's take a look at how these things work, right? This has been a theme of ours. How do these things work, and then what can go wrong? So let's take a look at the liver first. The liver is this big, big, big piece here. Let's put a mark on it. This is your liver. And this little green thing that's hanging off the side is the gallbladder. Bile. The liver produces bile. That's its main role in digestion. But like we said, there's two other roles that it has and a lot of subsidiary roles to that. This bile is dark green to yellowish. To yellowish brown, and it's fluid and it tastes real bitter. So if you've ever vomited or seen somebody vomit, you know that things come up and sometimes the foods look just like they did when they went down, and other times it's just kind of this mushy warm stuff. Well, if you've ever seen bile, it's green. So you'll see green vomit. And that's something that they make movies out of, right? The Exorcist, the green vomit just squirting out of people's mouths. That's not exactly how it looks in real life. But if someone's vomiting because of an excess of bile, or because the valve from the stomach opens up, the valve between the stomach and the duodenum open up, and the bile can go back into the stomach, and then the valve between the stomach and the esophagus opens up, you got to be pretty irritated to have that happen. But when that happens, there's green bile in the vomit. Anyway, we won't talk about vomit the whole time. So it's bitter tasting. It's dark green to yellowish brown. It emulsifies fat, which we talked about, breaks it into tiny globules. But here's the thing. What is bile made of? Well, it's 97% water. Can you believe it? 97% water. And only 0.7% is bile salts. 0.2% is bilirubin, which comes from the spleen from breakdown of red blood cells. Only 0.51% is fat. And it contains cholesterol, fatty acids, and lecithin. And bile is one of the ways that we eliminate excess cholesterol. Gets into the bile. It has a small amount of inorganic acids. So it's mostly water. But those bile salts are pretty effective. Now, when the liver squirts the bile out, it doesn't just squirt it out into the duodenum, as you see. It squirts it into the gallbladder. So the gallbladder can save it for later, for when there's a fatty meal. So the liver is just constantly producing bile. It's actually part of its detox is to put the toxins in the bile. So it's not going to stop producing bile and then start when you have a meal and then stop and then start. The liver is always producing bile. So we need a repository to hold that bile in between meals. So the gallbladder is just that repository. It's very small. It doesn't hold a lot. It doesn't take a lot of bile. And it sits there waiting. But it also, so it can hold more in less space, it concentrates it. Right? It takes a lot of the water out. It actually concentrates it to about a fifth the volume as what the liver squirts out. So what the liver squirts out is a very unconcentrated bile. 95% of the bile is actually reabsorbed down further down in the ileum. Remember, the ileum is the last part of the small intestine over here. It's the ileum. So 95% of the bile is actually reabsorbed, so you can reuse some of those bile acids, etc. It's a way that the body eliminates cholesterol. And here's the deal. When you take the bile, which sits in the gallbladder, and you mix it with sodium bicarbonate, which has a pH of 12, it neutralizes the chyme or the food particles that have been kind of boiled up and secreted out. They're sitting in the duodenum, and it neutralizes it. And why does it do that? It does that because enzymes that digest starch, which are produced by the pancreas, need an alkaline pH. All the activities that happen in that upper duodenum need an alkaline pH. Well, when that food is sitting in your stomach, it's acid, right? We talked about that before. Acid, very acidic. Once it gets into the duodenum, we need a way to neutralize it. The pancreas will put out some bicarbonate, and the gallbladder mixes it with bicarbonate so that it neutralizes that chyme. So we go from a 2.2 to about an 8 in the duodenum, and it does that by having sodium bicarbonate, which has a pH of 11. Okay? So that's it. So basically, what do you need to know? The liver produces bile. It's this greenish stuff that helps you to break down the fats into teeny tiny globules so that you can absorb them more easily and so that they have more surface area to be broken down by the enzyme called lipase. So there is the gallbladder sitting underneath, tucked underneath the liver. Okay? And there's these vessels, these ducts that attach, that come into the gallbladder from the liver, and then the gallbladder secretes the bile when it senses fat. And there's actually a hormone, you don't need to know all the hormonal stuff, but I'll just give you a real quickie. There's hormones actually in the gut. There's a lot of hormones in the gut. And there's a hormone called secretin and another one called cholecystokinin that actually let the body know, let the gallbladder know that fat's coming, and then it squirts its juices out. So if you don't have a gallbladder, you're just subject to having the liver secreting bile all day long. So when the fatty foods come in, there's just not enough bile being secreted. As opposed to when the gallbladder's there, it has this huge amount, you know, this very concentrated amount that it can squirt out and get your fat digestion. So we find a lot of times when people have their gallbladder removed is that they have difficulty with fatty meals. And that makes sense. But one of the things people don't realize is they may also have trouble with starchy meals because they don't effectively digest their starch because the bicarbonate from the gallbladder isn't there to neutralize it. Yeah, you got some bicarbonate from the pancreas, but it's generally not enough. Let's take a look at your gallbladder. What's its job description? What does it do for you? Well, like we said, it stores and concentrates the bile. And then when it gets the signal that you have fat in your food, it secretes the bile. And it secretes bicarbonate that mixes with the bile. And it all goes into the small intestine, the part called the duodenum. And that alkalizes the food that has become acidic from the stomach's actions. The alkaline environment is needed to begin the starchy food digestion with the amylase enzymes that the pancreas secretes. And when you have this alkaline environment, it helps maintain a healthy intestinal lining. So there's a couple of things that happen when your gallbladder gets removed, right? You no longer concentrate the bile, so you're not very efficient and effective at breaking down fats. You also don't neutralize the chyme from the stomach, the food bolus from the stomach, efficiently, effectively. So you have inefficient absorption of carbohydrates. And then finally, it doesn't have that alkaline secretion to help keep the digestive lining nice and healthy. So it's not like that they say, you don't need your gallbladder, let's take it out. We do need the gallbladder. Yeah, you can survive without your gallbladder, like you can survive without your tonsils and your appendix. But I think it's more important even than the tonsils and the appendix to have your gallbladder. So when people have attacks of the gallbladder, meaning that the bile gets congested, it gets too thick, and it gets stuck and forms little balls, gallstones, that make their way into the ducts. When that happens and people are doubled over in pain, they go to the hospital doctor and they immediately want to cut out their gallbladder. And there are plenty of other ways to deal with it. Not to say that all gallbladder surgery is unnecessary, but a lot of gallbladder surgery is unnecessary. So let's talk about the causes. We've been talking all along about how to keep your digestive tract healthy. So what's the biggest cause of liver disease and gallbladder issues? Well, the liver gets congested and it gets sluggish when it's just got to work too hard to detoxify alcohol, environmental pollutants, pesticides, processed fats, heterocyclic amines from charcoal meats, all those things that the liver needs to detoxify. If you're exposing yourself to a lot of that, it's going to get tired and it's not going to be effective at producing bile. So then your fat digestion is going to suffer. Another thing that causes liver disease is a poor diet. A diet that has an inadequate amount of the nutrients, an excess amount of things like hydrogenated oils, processed foods, and also high fructose corn syrup. High fructose corn syrup puts a huge load on the liver. And it can actually lead to fatty liver disease. So you don't have to be an alcoholic to get fatty liver disease. You don't have to be eating a ton of fat to get fatty liver disease. You can get fatty liver disease from eating high fructose corn syrup, which if you read the labels, is in just about everything out there. Okay. The liver is also gets diseased when you have a sedentary lifestyle and the junk food. You know, you're reaching for the fast food, the pizza, the chips, all that processed food. The liver has to deal with all that. It gets tired. It also has a problem when you have parasites. It has a lot of extra work to do when you have parasites. And there are some parasites that even, like liver flukes and things like that, can embed themselves into the liver. So you end up with gallbladder issues. You know, this is interesting. I don't know why the connection with these particular foods, but there seems to be food allergies to eggs, wheat, coffee, pork, and onions, or food sensitivities, I should say, can create gallbladder. It's just been studies that shown that. When you don't have enough stomach acid, you can end up with gallbladder issues. When you have a lack of exercise, you're not moving enough, or you've had a recent weight gain. But the other thing that's kind of interesting is when you have a rapid weight loss, because there's just a lot of toxicity in that the liver is dealing with, and the bile tends to get thick and sluggish, and you can have gallbladder issues. Childbirth, risk of, during childbirth, there's the old saying in medical school anyway, female fat, fertile, and 40. So it's more females are more prone to get gallbladder disease than males because of the effects of estrogen and birth control pills. Overweight, extra weight, tends to contribute to gallbladder disease. But it seems that the fertility, like a woman who's had 5 kids versus 2 kids, is more likely to have a gallbladder issue. Doesn't mean you have to by any stretch, but it's just saying. And then constipation. Things get backed up. Things aren't being eliminated, so things are backed up. It makes the bile really thick and sludgy, which causes gallbladder issues. You know, and really, it's not really the gallbladder's fault that it doesn't work well. It's the fault of the thick and sluggish bile that doesn't get moved through and that ends up forming stones. So really, when you address having a really healthy bile, that's when the gallbladder just works better. So how do we test the gallbladder? Well, there's exams that you can do that are on the body. Some of them are related to reflex, like applied kinesiology. Some of them are related to Chinese medicine, related to acupuncture points. And some of them are just related to, you know, lab tests. So oftentimes with liver and gallbladder issues, we're going to have a tenderness between the sixth and seventh ribs on the right, or tenderness over the third rib, 3 inches to the right of midline, or a tenderness under the right rib cage. Very common. That's where it's located, right? And with kinesiological testing, you can often have somebody put a finger on those points in muscle test and see if they go weak. Those are the less in the way of the scientific tests, but they do give you some good advice. In testing, there's some enzymes related to the liver. So if you look at your blood test and you see elevations of SGOT or SGPT, those are sometimes called AST and ALT. They're the same. Increased LDH, increased GGT. These are enzymes that when the liver is having trouble and is getting damaged by oxidation and other kinds of things, that these enzymes get released and elevate. Now, some of them are related to other organs besides just the liver. SGOT, SGPT, which are also called AST and ALT, those are usually pretty much liver. But LDH can be related to bone. It can also be related to the gut and cardiovascular. And then GGT or GGTP, usually is listed as GGT. That is a very good indicator for alcohol consumption. People will have rises in their GGT when they have alcohol. And alcohol, we know, affects the liver dramatically. It helps to, you know, slow it down and decrease the flow of bile, etc. The other thing that can be related to the liver or gallbladder is alkaline phosphatase. And alkaline phosphatase can be related also to bone or gut or cardiovascular. You get decrease in uric acid can suggest that your phase two liver detox is inefficient. So I would just suggest you have the slide, you can jot notes on it, and the next time you get a lab test done, or you have previous lab tests you've had done, take a look and see what these numbers tell you about the health of your liver and gallbladder. You can also have increased cholesterol, HDL, or low HDL, increased LDL, and decreased bile insufficiency. So these are all things that can happen when your liver and gallbladder aren't working well, and what you can test. So if you test yourself and you have high cholesterol, high LDLs, low HDLs, a little bit high or even a lot high on alkaline phosphatase, GGT, LDH, SGOT, and then you have also the uric acid that's decreased, that would be a good sign that there's liver gallbladder stress. You don't have to have all of them. You don't have to have all of them, just a few. Okay, so those are ways that you can assess it. So let's look at how we can support it. What's in a nutshell? Liver produces bile. It concentrates, the bile gets concentrated in the gallbladder and stored. When you eat a fatty meal, the bile gets released, starts to break down the fats into little tiny globules, and then the lipase from the pancreas comes in and acts on it, and we're a happy camper. So if this stuff isn't going right and you are not feeling well, you're feeling that gaseousness, sometimes you feel a right shoulder pain, feel that pain under the right rib cage, you might have a liver gallbladder problem. If you know already that you've been told you have a liver or gallbladder problem, there's some basic things that you might not have been told if you were evaluated by conventional medicine. One is breathing and relaxing before eating. Where have you heard that one before, right? That's one of our favorite ways to get the digestive tract ready for food. Chewing thoroughly. Okay, we've been harping on things. Avoid sugar, refined carb, gluten, and alcohol. They all can aggravate the system. Avoid trans or bad fats. Trans fats are those fats that have been oxidized by heat, light, or air. Or they've been artificially hydrogenated in the lab. Food allergies. Okay, so these are sounding very similar to what we've been talking about all along, hasn't it? Essential fatty acid rich foods. Okay, again, because we want that balance. We want an anti-inflammatory balance. Chlorophyll-rich foods are super important, as well as greens, the bitter greens. And we'll talk more about a few more protocols and things and herbs. But bitter greens are amazing for stimulating the bile flow. It thins the bile, makes it less thick and goopy, and it also stimulates it to flow. And we're going to talk about how that works in just a bit when we talk about some of the herbs. It's really important not to overeat and overtax your fatty metabolism. And don't skip meals is not a bad idea if you've got some gallbladder issues, because oftentimes that will cause the buildup of too much bile. You know, the bile gets built up and built up. It's concentrated. And if it's not released, it can cause problems. So what do we do in terms of supplements? Well, you can take bitters to stimulate bile production. Well, you can also drink juice, bitter juice, or you can eat bitter greens. You can take lipase enzymes to help with the breakdown, but that's not going to help the bile production. So it's assuming you have bile. You can take taurine, which is a precursor, and it's one of the amino acids that's in the bile. It's a precursor to one of the bile acids. Vitamin C, very helpful. And then there's some liver cleansing herbs, and we'll go more into detail about some of the liver cleansing herbs. But milk thistle, which is an antioxidant, helps to protect. Dandelion, which is an awesome mover and shaker of the bile, as they're yellow duck and burdock. And I have a whole list of these on a page coming up. Then there's liver stimulating herbs. There's cleansing herbs and stimulating herbs. Cleansing herbs are more tonifying to the body, and stimulating herbs will actually get the particular organs to do something. And we talk about some of the what's called cholagogues. I'll share with you a little bit about the different acts that they have, the different herbs that have. Lecithin can be helpful. Lecithin is a phospholipid, and it can help with the breakdown and the detoxification of fats. And then peppermint oil can be very soothing. It's especially soothing if you're having a gallbladder attack and you've got some spasming of any of the ducts. The peppermint will relax the ducts. And then a bunch of the B vitamins are important for bile production. For those of you who have your gallbladder, you want to keep your gallbladder, right? So what are ways that you can keep your gallbladder? Fasting and juicing can be very helpful, especially if you're in acute stage, if you're finding that you have a problem. Just don't make it work. Just don't make it work, and just allow things to settle out. Fasting, I've had people who have called me up doubled over in pain, and they say, I think it's my gallbladder, and I don't want to go to the hospital. What should I do? Well, I say, well, I don't want you to eat anything, and go very carefully on sipping water, because you don't want the thing to go into spasm, the duct to go into spasm and cause a blockage. Regular cleansing, like doing green juices, green smoothies, greens, to give yourself a cleanse and a break from the heavy-duty food. Bitters, which you can take and have like 5 to 15 minutes before meals, like we've talked about before. And then there's some herbs and foods that actually thin the bile, like beets, especially fermented beets. I don't know if you've ever had fermented beets, but they're actually quite tasty. Turmeric, milk thistle, artichoke, and dandelion. The other thing that can be helpful for keeping a gallbladder intact is apple cider vinegar. It contains malic acid, which softens bile. Apples also contain malic acid, but if you have sensitivity to blood sugar, you don't want to be making apple juice, so you can do apple cider vinegar. Anti-inflammatory herbs, and we've talked about a number of anti-inflammatory herbs as we've gone through, right? Things like turmeric and ginger and boswellia and quercetin. There's also anti-spasmodic herbs, things that calm, things like valerian and chamomile and a whole bunch of others that we talked about in the previous one. I want to make sure that you're aware that I am not suggesting that you treat a gallbladder problem on your own. It's really a good idea to have a practitioner on board that knows how to guide you. It's important to do ultrasounds to diagnose the size and location of the stones, and following up is so critical. It's amazing how few people actually follow up when they've done some testing to see if it worked. So what do you do if you've already lost your gallbladder? Well, there are considerations. Do you need to avoid fried foods and trans fats? Those are going to damage it. You need to minimize, if not avoid, dairy. I always go for the eliminate until proven proven not guilty. Fats cooked with sugar somehow form some chemical compounds that are aggravating to the liver and the gallbladder, so you avoid those. You significantly reduce your grains when you don't have a gallbladder because it's just not that effective. Or the digestion of it, it's just not that effective. Bitters are awesome. You know, bitters can be a tincture from, I think Mountain Rose has one that was I heard, Herbalist Alchemist, Gaia, any of the nice brands that do reputable and organically sourced herbs can be good. And you can make a bitters. And what is a bitters, right? We talked about it before, but bitters is a series of bitter herbs. And they stimulate a reflex in the tongue that says, hey, produce more bile. Hey, produce more stomach acid. So it's a really good stimulant, digestive stimulant. So let's look at supplementing with lipase. Lipase is a fat digesting enzyme. And just like we've talked about supplementing with protease before, that's a protein digesting, we can actually supplement with lipase. We can also supplement with bile salts. And most people without a gallbladder do well to supplement with bile salts. And what that basically is more concentrated bile that you're taking before your meals or at the very beginning of your meals. And what's the reason for that? So if you've had your gallbladder removed, right? Remember we said the gallbladder, it concentrates the bile. Liver produces it, gallbladder stores it. If you don't have the gallbladder, the bile is just on drip feed from the liver. And it's not real concentrated and there's not a lot of it. And there's no way to control it by the amount of fat you eat. Whereas with the gallbladder intact, it gets stimulated by the food and, you know, oh, I need this much lipase. Okay. When you put in the bile salts when you don't have, it helps to do that emulsification that we talked about. We talked about that a little bit ago. You need to emulsify the fats. So if you supplement with the bile salts when you have no gallbladder, it's going to help your body to do that emulsification. Because without it, it's not going to do a whole lot of good emulsification. It's just going to have a little dribble. That's why they say don't eat too many fats. Okay, oftentimes when I have people bile salt, I have them do it with all fatty meals, and they can do 5 days on and 2 days off. It's really important, not only for the entire digestive tract, but especially for the liver and gallbladder, that you avoid late night snacking, because that diverts the attention away from healing, away from detoxifying, and into the digestive tract to deal with the food. So you avoid late eating snacking. The other reason is that, and also going to bed by midnight, is that the liver in Chinese medicine is on between 1 a.m. and 3 a.m. And when the liver is on, that's when it's doing its thing. But if you're out partying between 1 and 3, you're not getting a good liver detox. It's not going to be as efficient at other hours. Okay, so we're going to decrease the toxic load. So we're going to be avoiding late night snacking, get to bed by midnight, decrease the toxic load. It's really important, once you've done that, to do what's called, I call an oil change. You get rid of your fried foods, your oxidized oils. You add hemp seeds, chia seeds, algae, flax, walnuts. You add the essential fats, simple and easy to handle. And you monitor how you feeling, how you doing without all this stuff and with this new stuff. You'd be amazed at the differences. And then finally, we need enough protein. We don't want 250 protein gram a day diet. The reason we want more, just in general, we want more protein and make sure that we have enough protein, is that oftentimes we're having an issue with stomach acid when you're having liver issues. So you want to be able to have enough protein to repair that lining. If you need it, you can supplement with protein powder or green powder or spirulina powder if you need it. This is a list. Isn't that interesting? Some of the same foods that support your gut also support your liver. Some of these you've already been talking about, the citrus peels with the limonene, the brassicas, caraway, turmeric, avocado, beets, basil, leafy greens, can't say enough about that. Really amazing for the liver gallbladder connection. Mushrooms, cardamom, cayenne, chlorella, cilantro, cinnamon, dandelion, dill, fennel, garlic, ginger, grapefruit, green juices, Jerusalem artichoke, onion, peppermint, rosemary, sea vegetables, thyme, radishes, and wheatgrass. Those are all the liver supportive herbs, right? You can glance through the lists and you can see what they do. I've given you some more information in other presentations here about what some of these do, but you don't have to do all of these every day. Just pick a handful to do every day to really help your body. There's also some superfoods for the liver, some foods that are concentrated that you don't necessarily need in large amounts for general day-to-day maintenance, but that are kind of special. And they support the liver in really great ways. So spirulina and chlorella. And they're really good at helping to absorb some of the toxins so that it takes the burden off the liver. Green matcha tea is actually a kind of tea that's beneficial. Chlorophyll, which you get in your green leafy vegetables, in seaweeds. If you have to, take a supplement. Those are things you can get in your food real easily. And then we have milk thistle. I love milk thistle. It's an antioxidant for the liver. Burdock, which grows in the ground. Dandelion, which grows wild on a lot of people's lawns. You know, those little yellow flowers that you go, you blow. Yeah, those dandelions. The roots are phenomenal for liver detox. The leaves are phenomenal as bitters, as cholagogues. It's awesome stuff. And finally, hawthorn. Hawthorn's super important. They say in China, they have people actually can make hot tea out of hawthorn and wipe the counters down with it. Green tea extracts have been studied a great deal, a lot, with a lot of degenerative diseases and with liver stuff. So it's something that you can look into. Chlorophyll, you can take chlorophyll. Seaweeds. Seaweeds are awesome for the liver. And you can use them as kelp. You can use them as dulse. You can use them as nori. You can use sea vegetables in great ways. Okay, these seeds on this picture, by the way, are milk thistle seeds. So there's a term you're going to hear thrown out a bunch if you listen to digestion seminars or read about digestion. It's a word called cholagogue. And a cholagogue is basically an herb that stimulates the flow of bile from the liver. That's what it does. It stimulates the bile flow from the liver. It also stimulates the secretion of bile from the gallbladder. It's good because not only does it help to strengthen the liver, but it also helps to enhance detoxification. So what are some of these cholagogue herbs and how would you take them? Well, some of them you could take as tinctures. Some of them you could take as a liquid. And when would you take them? Well, you might take them beginning of the day and the end of the day. You might take them right before meals. Whatever you do, just take them. The one on this list called greater celandine, pictured over on the left, it's one of the classic herbs for the liver. And it's used in a lot of formulas, both Chinese and otherwise. And when you use it, you have to be really careful not to use too much, just use a little bit, because it really can have a stimulating effect. It can be helpful, but you don't want to overshoot the mark. So some of the others, artichoke. It's mainly the leaves of the artichoke that are useful. Others that I haven't used a whole lot of, but blue flag, iris versicolor. It's been said to have lots of good effects on the liver, and it's a cholagogue that moves things out. Bone set. People think of bone set as something you take when you have broken bones. Bone set is actually really good for fevers, and it's a really good liver cleanser. And dandelion root. We have dandelion root here. I don't see it. Dandelion grows as wild as wild can be. And I remember when I was a kid just always seeing those flowers that turn to the white and we blow them. So some of the others that you may or may not know about, we talked about dandelion. Another one is fringe tree. I haven't used it much. Gentian, which is used a lot in bitters, golden seal, greater celandine, which I mentioned already. And there's rosemary, wild indigo, wild yam, and yellow dock. So those are your cholagogue herbs. And the way that you would take them, you could take a cup of tea with some of them. Artichoke, you can actually simmer up the leaves. You can simmer up the whole thing. You can make the artichoke if you want to eat it, and then you can drink the liquid. That's a good way to do it. Barberry and blue flag usually come as tinctures. Bone set, similarly. Dandelion root, easy to get. Dandelion, you make a cup of tea. And you do this on a regular basis. And you get the leaves, you eat them on a regular basis. Gentian is a very, very bitter herb. And it, I,
Golden seal is used more frequently, but gentian is used. Golden seal, good old friend. And I think part of it is the berberine concentration. Rosemary. Rosemary is a really good one. Sage is in the song Parsley, Sage, Rosemary, and Thyme. It's one of those things that go along for kind of in a continental type of a seasoning flavoring. It's something that people use when they're making turkey and things like that. I think it's an underused herb myself. I think it's a really powerful, effective as a liver detoxifier. Now, it may be that you have another use for one of these herbs, and that's okay. That would be really great because you could read it and go, oh, that's good. I can use this for my liver and help to support that. I know that dandelion also can work as a diuretic. I need that too. So look at the list, and I would say just pick a couple that you're familiar with, or pick one or two that you're not familiar with. Learn about it and see if it's something that applies. Whenever I'm trying to figure out if a particular herb applies to me, I will evaluate it based on what it's said to do. What are the effects it has? So if I'm trying to figure out, let's just say, yellow dock, for example. Okay, I'm working with yellow dock. I go, oh, okay, I heard that it's a really good cholagogue. It's going to help me move my bile. What else does it do that I might need? Oh, yellow dock also helps stimulate stomach acid. Whoa, I need that. What else does yellow dock do? It's been associated with growing thicker hair and nails. Ooh, I like that. You see, you may not get that each of these different herbs that have multiple uses. And in the folklore, it's really easy to find. I love yellow dock. I think yellow dock is one of the most underused. Not only is it good as a cholagogue and it's supportive of the liver, but man, does it help the stomach acid and helps with iron deficiency, and it actually contains iron and some other minerals. Really good stuff. I'm going to finish with a little cleanse, and I'm going to just present this to you tonight and let you sit with it and let you kind of stew with all of the things that we've presented so far. And then next week, I'm going to be pulling it all together for you. We have an extra call next week. I'm going to be pulling it together. If you can't make that call, no problem. It will all be recorded. But I'm going to summarize and review getting your small intestine working, getting the leaky gut handled, getting rid of bugs, both small and large, and making sure you're eliminating properly the right number of times a day, and helping your liver gallbladder. So I've got a little just really gentle 5-day liver gallbladder cleanse. Very easy to do. You're going to take some herbs for your liver. I've listed Health Force Nutritionals because I like that company. I like what they do. I like that they're all whole foods and concentrates. Awesome stuff. You can use other favorite liver rescue kind of antioxidant kind of formulas if you like. That one is one I particularly like. You're going to continue to gut rejuvenator. You're going to do green drinks 1 quart a day, unless you have sensitivity to some of those foods in there. We're going to eat easy to digest foods. So not a lot of heavy fat, not a lot of starches. It's a real simple meal for 5 days. Bitters with every meal. And then as many of the liver support herbs as you can. Like as what makes sense. You can make it in teas. You can make it in tinctures. I have people who call it their liquid lunch. They put all their nutrients and herbs together and they have a liquid lunch. Okay. So there's a specific natural cleanse cholagogue. This is not one of those drink a cup of olive oil and get rid of all your stones deals. Those can work, but I recommend that you do one of those in a supervised fashion if you've never done it before. Okay. But this is much more gentle, much more doable. You're basically going to have this drink 3 times a day that has a tablespoon of lemon juice, a tablespoon of olive oil, organic, and a tablespoon of apple cider vinegar. And you're going to shake it up real well, mix it up real well, and drink it 3 times a day. Why are we doing this? Well, these components will help to stimulate the flow of the bile. That, along with the liver rescue formula, it's going to help things to flow. And then for maintenance, that you do for 5 days, you do it 3 times a day. And then you continue to take your liver formula, whatever it is. And if you don't want to take a formula, you can usually just go through the list of herbs and just put together a formula yourself. But I really recommend, this is whole food stuff. It's really, really good and well done. Or if you have another favorite herb. During maintenance, after the 5 days, you can continue to take the liver formula twice a day for a whole month. And then look at consuming probiotics. So start looking at your flora and add the probiotics. Follow the diet guidelines and you're going to be good to go. That is it for my presentation on the liver and the gallbladder.